The word sugar still has incredibly pleasant connotations for me. My mom called Dad sugar all the time, and occasionally me. And I just can't look at the stuff without feeling a little happy. Despite all the ways it's delivered to us, powder, cube, grain, processed, natural, brown, white, turbinado, or honey from the bee, or syrup from the tree, and no matter what we call it, dextrose, sucrose, fructose, or whatever, it's sugar. And sugar is sugar. And there's a lot of money in it. Millions of dollars worth of empty calories change hands every Halloween, the number one day in the sugar business. Then follow the other holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and of course, Valentine's, the day specially consecrated to sweethearts.
Well, don't you feel good about yourself now? Folks, Pam Colleen is in. It's Thursday. Fasten your seatbelts for coupon ride. Pam directed me to that video, and I watched that video this morning, Pam. What is it called?
Sweet Suicide, or How Sugar Ruins Your Health. It's a documentary done by Dr. Nancy Appleton, who wrote the book Lick the Sugar Habit. And she has a website where she outlines at least, 140 reasons why we should be avoiding sugar.
140?
Oh, yeah, she's got, I think, up to 143 reasons right now. So, and all of it is cited published research, so...
Well, I don't know if we get to all 143, but we're going to get to some of them this morning. We have a very special guest, not a medical expert this time, because usually, Pam, the guests you bring along have all kinds of degrees and are at various universities. This is a whole different story, which makes it fascinating.
Yes, this is the story of Jill Escher, and she basically, at the age of 45, realized that she was addicted to sugar and knew that she needed to do something about it for the sake of her health. So she's gone ahead and published a book called Farewell Club Permachub, A Sugar Addict's Guide to Easy Weight Loss.
And Club Permachub. I like that.
She's also starting this year the Sugar Addiction Awareness Day, which is technically October 30th, but she's doing a blogathon for an entire week. So we want to come up with some solutions, some better alternatives for children. And rather than giving them sugar for Halloween, we need to come up with better solutions.
Well, what a time to do this, because we're leading right up to Halloween right now, and people are right now buying the candy. I heard someone on the news a couple of nights ago saying the average American eats 24 pounds.
Oh, it's higher than that. Yeah.
But that, that includes all the people who don't eat any candy, mm-hmm. But it averages out to 24 pounds. Anyway, if you would introduce Jill.
Oh, yeah. This is Jill Escher. And again, she's the author of Farewell Club Permachub, A Sugar Addict's Guide to Easy Weight Loss. And she joins us this morning from San Jose, California. Good morning, Jill.
Hi, Pam. Home of the Sharks.
Jill, welcome to Canada.
Hi, Andy.
It's the one way you can get into Canada without being searched at the border. Anyway, we appreciate you joining us. You have a fascinating story. Tell us about the epiphany you had when you suddenly realized you were not the woman physically that you wanted to be.
Well, I had always been somebody who looked at drug addicts and alcoholics and thought, oh, how could they get that way? How could they let themselves go like that? How could they lose control over their own bodies like that? And always had some sort of disdain for them. But the whole time, I really didn't realize that I myself had a biochemical addiction as well. And it's probably the most hidden but most pervasive chemical addiction that we have in both Canada and the U.S. right now, and that is to sugar. Ever since I was little, I felt very strong sugar cravings. And in fact, my first memory was when I was 2 years old, and I struggled to open up the cap to a small fake toy medicine bottle with little sugary pellets inside. And as I grew up, I was always a little bit overweight, not very much, I would say between, 10 to 20 pounds. But I could never quite lose my weight. And as I got older and older, I put on more and more weight until I was about 35 pounds overweight. But every day I noticed I had to eat something sweet. I couldn't remember the last time I went without something sweet. It was, maybe it was a cookie, maybe it was some ice cream, maybe it was a little bit of candy that my husband had stashed in the pantry, maybe it was a little something I picked up when I was at Starbucks. But it was always something. I really couldn't make it a day without eating something sweet. But otherwise, I was quite a healthy person, a healthy eater. I was very active. I always exercised. I knew I wasn't lazy. So I couldn't really understand why I was overweight. And After meeting a friend who had lost 70 pounds and called it easy to lose those 70 pounds, I asked, how could it possibly be easy? I can't even lose a single pound. She said that she had gone to a group called Overeaters Anonymous, which, you know, I had heard of, but I assumed was always for people who were very, very large and with binge eating disorders. And that she had, through changing her diet and getting rid of all sugar and grains, been able to come to a place where she could eat three meals a day without snacks and not have any cravings for the white stuff. I was fascinated by this because I always thought, like most of us, that losing weight was about calories and exercise. Diet and exercise. And what she taught me was, no, this was about changing really your fundamental biochemistry, really reclaiming your biochemistry through eating real food and getting rid of those crazy cravings that a lot of us have come to think are normal, that are really not normal at all. So I lost about 35 pounds in about 4 months. I lost it very easily, very quickly, and my friends started saying, how did you do it? So I ended up writing this little girlfriend's guide kind of book. It's very friendly, very short, detailing how anybody can really lose their sugar addiction and finally reclaim their fundamental biochemistry and regain control over their health.
Now, Jill, when you stopped eating sugar, did you have any withdrawal effects?
Oh, absolutely. So when I say that it was easy to lose the weight, I mean it's easy in the sense that I didn't have to go, you know, running and burn calories and sweat it out. I didn't have to deprive myself in any way. I ate very good food. But there is a withdrawal, and my withdrawal, the worst part lasted about 3 days, and then it kind of tapered off. After about 3 weeks, I felt fundamentally, although not completely free of that, what I call gremlin in my head, you know, craving the white stuff. And the withdrawal is very much like a drug withdrawal if you read the textbooks. I was very, very, very tired. I was grumpy. I had overwhelming cravings. I had a lot of trouble sleeping. I didn't have headaches, but other people I interviewed for my book had a lot of headaches. Irritability, craving, and fatigue are the most prominent symptoms, but it varies from person to person.
Jill, let me jump in here. People who are hearing this are going, well, that's nice, Andy. So you got a woman on who was overweight, and she was addicted to sugar, and here's this former lawyer and a former sugar addict who looked in the mirror one day, didn't like herself, and stopped eating sweets and lost 35 pounds. More than that. So what's the story? What is the story, Jill?
The story is that there are millions and millions and millions of people, just like me, who are unwittingly addicted to sugar. And they wake up in the morning and they look in the mirror and they see this overweight body. They get on the scale and they see the extra 20, 30, 40, 50, whatever pounds. And they're not quite sure why this is happening. And everything else they have tried has failed. They tried counting calories. They tried exercises. They tried, you know, fad diets. They've tried everything, but their blood sugar is high, their weight is high, they have all sorts of aches and pains, and what is happening is they have a fundamental underlying addiction that is not being addressed, and in fact is not yet, although it's changing, fully acknowledged in the medical community.
So give me 10 seconds on what your secret is. I was in Chapters a couple of days ago with my wife, and we're just wandering around, And I went to the diet section, and it was huge. And just about everybody in the world, it seems, has written a book about losing weight. How did you, Jill Escher, not a doctor, not a nutritionist, a former lawyer, develop the chutzpah to write a book about losing weight and specifically the role of sugar?
I guess I do have some chutzpah, but I have chutzpah because it works. That's why I had several friends do this. I had several family members, coworkers do this plan, and I found time after time after time that it worked.
We have
so
to.
It was only when I saw that this was right that I ended up actually publishing something about it. And that's what gave me the chutzpah.
We have to take a short break, but when we come back, I want to ask you, I got to confess to something. When I'm in a restaurant and I'm tempted to have fries or the ice cream or the dessert, I just look around and I see someone who's badly overweight, and that's my motivation not to have those extra sweets. I want to get you to give us a snapshot of the society we live in, the conditions of our bodies, and where this is all going. When we come back in just a moment with author Jill Escher, in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
The word sugar still has incredibly pleasant connotations for me. My mom called Dad sugar all the time, and occasionally me. And I just can't look at the stuff without feeling a little happy. Despite all the ways it's delivered to us, powder, cube, grain, processed, natural, brown, white, turbinado, or honey from the bee, or syrup from the tree, and no matter what we call it, dextrose, sucrose, fructose, or whatever, it's sugar. And sugar is sugar. And there's a lot of money in it. Millions of dollars worth of empty calories change hands every Halloween, or number one day in the sugar business. Then follow the other holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and of course, Valentine's, the day specially consecrated to sweethearts.
It is sour news. If you have a sweet tooth, we're talking about sugar this morning. I'm talking to author Pam Colleen, whose book is called
Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic.
And Jill Escher, Jill, whose book is called
Farewell Club Permachub, a Sugar Addict's Guide to Easy Weight Loss.
Now, Jill, you heard about Pam's book and you gave her a call.
I did. I admire Pam so much. She's done incredible work and she has incredible insight. And she's very right about the hidden epidemics that we aren't doing enough to address.
I asked Pam some time ago about what if you had to put your finger on one issue in our society that is in a very negative way affecting our health. Just one, because there are a myriad, she said simply. Sugar. Would you agree?
You know, I do. I do. I talked about interviewing, you know, friends and colleagues, etc., but I did a considerable amount of research before I wrote this little book. And it's becoming increasingly clear that these massive epidemics that we're seeing in public health now, you know, everything from obesity to diabetes to heart disease to even depression, are very linked to our overconsumption of sugar, and also that overconsumption of sugar is linked to a real biochemical addiction.
Okay, let me just jump in and take that little list that you were giving us and stretch it to 10. What are our 10 biggest health issues related directly to this subject of sugar addiction? You mentioned obesity off the top.
Yeah, and Pam, please chime in. You're so knowledgeable about this, but the first one, the most obvious one, the one that we see with our eyes is the epidemic of overweight and obesity. And I think I was actually a very, very common example. I had about, in my adult life, anywhere between 20 to 35 extra pounds of overweight. And the average American now, I don't know about the Canadian, but I imagine it's similar, is about 25 pounds overweight. So that's the most obvious one. But that's actually just a symptom of the underlying problem. The weight itself is not so problematic, but for the elevated blood sugar that caused that weight problem. And that elevated blood sugar leads to a number of other conditions. Of course, prediabetes, which is in many tens of millions now, diabetes itself, which is a really catastrophic condition unless it's treated properly with a low-sugar, low-starch diet, high blood pressure. That's a big one. And I don't know if I'm counting. Maybe that was four. of course, cardiovascular disease, gout, depression, anxiety, ADHD, and polycystic ovarian syndrome. Those are 10 of 140 problems that really happen when a sugar addiction is not addressed.
Now, Jill isn't making any of this up. The World Health Organization in 2003 published a report basically saying that processed foods were causing cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity. And of course, along with obesity, there are over 40 health conditions surface. So, you know, it's the World Health Organization saying this. It's not Jill Escher. It's not Pam Colleen. It's our prominent, you know, health officials out there in the world. But unfortunately, they're not enforcing. They're not educating. And that's why we can be so grateful for a book like Jill's book, because it's a handy guide to teach the average Joe how to pull sugar out of their diet and do it in a healthy way.
Jill, I'm going to issue you a challenge. If you were Deb Matthews, who you don't know, but she lives here in London, and she is the health minister for the province of Ontario, our health care budget in Ontario is approaching 50% of our total budget, and there are predictions that in the next 15 to 20 years, it's going to explode to 70%, even 80%. It's going to overwhelm this province and potentially, unless we do something dramatic, bankrupt us. If you were the health minister of Ontario facing that situation, dream a little here on this issue of sugar. I mean, we can't ban sugar. What could we do?
That's a very good question. And based on the various studies that I've seen, I can easily imagine that 50% of the health budget is attributable to conditions that derive from high blood sugars. So I would say, you know, that the one thing any governmental agency could do is really take sugar addiction seriously, like today, like now, and really look at the numbers. How much money is being spent on prediabetes, on diabetes, on all those things that we were talking about just a minute ago? All of those, in large part, are related to elevated blood sugar, which is related to, of course, elevated dietary sugar. So the dietary sugars we're talking about is not just the white crystalline sucrose, the table sugar. It's also high fructose corn syrup and also starches. We don't tend to think of those as sugar, but you don't have to have something sweet on the tongue for it to be sweet on the body. So things like grains, especially refined grains, potatoes, corn, rice, those things also can really elevate our blood sugar and cause the same problems that refined white sugar cause.
Jill, if we made you the health minister and we said, okay, you're going to have to get through most of your procedures democratically, but you're allowed one edict. You're allowed to do something dramatic, whether it's a ban or whatever, to address this issue of all these diseases and all the health budget problems we have related to sugar. What would you do with your red marker? What would you circle and ban?
That's such a good question. I think I would ban high fructose corn syrup. I think that sodas and other sweetened snack foods and fast foods, which are very largely based on high fructose corn syrup, are driving a good portion of these epidemics.
We have to take a short break, Jill, and I apologize for that. We'll come back in just a moment. We're hearing these reports, but we're not listening. We had a report out just a couple of days ago. It got saturation media coverage, but that's yesterday's news, and it's gone. But it built a bridge, a direct link between soda pop and violence in teenagers. Sugar and violence in teenagers. I want to ask you about that, because that's a pretty dramatic claim. And after watching that video this morning showing how a sweet little angelic child turned into a holy monster over a period of a few minutes when they started pumping sugar into him, it's something we need to talk about. When we come back in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Scientists at Princeton University fed sugar to rats for several weeks and then took it away from them. The rats showed opioid symptoms identical to drug withdrawals, such as the shakes and teeth chattering, and high-pitched crying and anxiety, even changes in brain chemistry.
This looks like food to other people. To me, this is heroin. Mm-hmm. You know, I could just like put it right in my veins. And in fact, might even pick the fruit off.
Might even pick the fruit off? Because they can't get enough sugar. You know, folks, I wouldn't believe some of this stuff, but I do recall a reporter at this radio station, and we're down here at 743 Wellington Road South. We're about 100 meters from a Tim Hortons. We had a reporter come back after getting a coffee at Tim Hortons, and he said, Andy, you will not believe what I just saw. The person in front of me, a man, went to the counter and said to the absolutely startled clerk, I'd like a coffee with 5 creams and 10 sugars. He said the clerk went white in the face and said, sir, how many sugars? 10, he said. And after the person left with their coffee, the clerk needed a moment to compose themselves because they had never had that request before and wondered if it was even company to procedure to put 10 sugars in one cup of coffee. Jill, I mean, you've written a book about being addicted to sugar. What stories have you heard along that line?
I do want to make a comment about the 10 things of sugar, because a large soda would commonly have 10 teaspoons of sugar in it. So it's not that uncommon. If you see somebody dousing their coffee in that much sugar, guess what? Kids are doing that all the time.
And sugar is a stimulant. So they're essentially in the coffee. They're looking for a stimulant upon a stimulant.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the kind of stories I hear are, there's so many. I don't think there are any two sugar addictions that are exactly the same. But, you know, people basically, you know, getting up at midnight, having such strong cravings, you know, going to their freezer, opening it and just scavenging for anything sweet they can find. And if there's nothing there, they will get in their car and go to the local convenience store and get their ice cream and then come home and eat it. And, you know, I did things that were similar. My sugar addiction was a little milder than most, but that's really common. You know, the 3 o'clock blues, having to go out of the office to find a cookie or, you know, find that really sugary coffee drink.
I heard of an American woman who installed one of these spy tech cameras in her house because she was suspicious her husband was up to no good, possibly seeing a woman. It was kind of strange because it was at 2:30 in the morning. He would quietly get up and leave for about a half an hour. And so she installed these cameras. She discovered he was going down to the basement where he had, under the couch, a stash of his favorite chocolates. This is not a joke. Yeah. People are addicted.
I know. I'll tell you just one more story. A woman who is type 2 diabetic and insulin dependent and very obese, she has in her house her own refrigerator where she keeps, you know, her own stash of treats that she eats in timing with her insulin shots. So in other words, she takes her insulin to cover up for her daily binge, often twice daily binge, on her sugary treats. And she has her own place where her husband can't find it, can't get it, can't touch it.
Jill, I want to ask you, as a society, what price we're paying for our addiction to sugar. I'm going to welcome our callers to call in if you want to. There's so much good information here that you may just want to sit back and listen. But if you relate to what you're hearing, 643-1290, if you have a story you want to share. Because I think, Jill, that we're sometimes crippled by our conviction that we can't overcome this addiction. Is that the state that you were in before you looked in the mirror and said, wait a minute, I'm going to change my life. I'm going to address this addiction to sugar?
Absolutely. I felt totally helpless. I remember hearing about that comedian Drew Carey. He had been a large guy, and he cut out all the sugar and grains from his diet and lost an enormous amount of weight. I remember hearing that story and thinking, how is that possible? How could anybody do that? I can't imagine my life without these foods. And but it doesn't happen overnight for most people. It took me at least a year to get my head around the fact that I had this addiction and I had to find a way to treat it. But it really does start with, just like Alcoholics Anonymous, just like any other drug treatment program, it has to start with acknowledging and admitting your addiction. Going to a meeting with other people who have this problem and saying, hi, my name is Jill and I'm a sugar addict.
Now,
one
of the antidotes I have that I recommend to all my students is to neutralize the sugar craving, is to eat more animal fat in the diet. So the antidote for sugar addiction is something that's actually the opposite from what our dietary dictocrats tell us to do, which is to avoid animal fat. But that's what's really got us into trouble in the first place.
Yeah, so absolutely. You have to eat, you know, you have to go through a process first, I think, of admitting this addiction and wanting to do something about it. And it absolutely has to be followed up with a highly nutritious food plan based, among other things, on very healthy fats.
Jill, This is painful for me. I have a good friend who's married to a woman who doesn't eat vegetables at all, and is we visited them once, and we came through the garage, and I saw two of those great big garbage cans filled with empty soda pop cans. And, you know, my wife and I just, we got in the car afterward, and we just felt so sad, and we said, start the meter on diabetes. How long? Yeah. How long till diabetes? Well, then, you know, a few years later, she was sharing that she couldn't feel her feet, and diabetes was just a matter of time. And we're taught the incredibly sad news, Jill, is that we are talking an epidemic here.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. You know, it depending on who you talk to, you know, in about 20 to 30 years, half of the American adult population could be diabetic or pre-diabetic. So it's definitely an epidemic.
Now, the big sugar, as it's known, the sugar lobby, has a tremendous influence over both of our governments in Canada and the United States. When the World Health Organization published this report back in 2003, basically saying, you know, reduce your consumption of processed foods, but specifically even referred to reducing our consumption of sugar, the sugar lobby went ballistic and threatened the American government. They wanted the World Health Organization to retract this report. Very manipulative, scheme based, which stemmed from the sugar lobby. This is a huge, huge influence in North America. So how do we get the truth out? How do we warn people about the negative effects of sugar?
Well, I think ultimately the medical profession will have to pony up here. and it's starting. I've been in contact with many, many, many notable physicians and clinicians who are really seeing this connection and who believe that they have to do more to really inform their patients about the negative effects of sugar, just as they do with about drugs or alcohol. It's going to have to also be a grassroots movement, and there's a lot happening there. For example, I'm the founder of something called Sugar Addiction Awareness Day. Anyone can Google that, Sugar Addiction Awareness Day, and we have a website filled with information about sugar addiction and tons of resources. It's all volunteer run. And I think that over time, this information is going to bubble up. There are also a number of big books about sugar and sugar addiction that will be coming out in the next year or two, written by very notable authors and scientists.
Jill, what changed our minds about drinking and driving is a regular dose of horrific crashes. We've had them for as long as I've been in broadcasting, close to 40 years, just a steady parade of horrific crashes involving drunk drivers. And that gradually, I think, changed our minds as a society about drinking and driving.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, we're having a lot more crashes in people's lives when it comes to sugar, but they're not in the news. They're not in the headlines. We don't see the blood and the gore and the police roadblocks and so on. I mean, what is it going to take? Is it going to take Ontario going broke from its health budget alone for us to say to each other, we have to address some of these issues?
Well, I hope not. But for whatever reason, it's easier for us to demonize drunk driving than it is for us to demonize the consumption or overconsumption of sugar. And that's because, obviously, drunk driving has a very acute and horrible impact. Sugar is really a slow poison. We don't have a Twinkie, in most cases, and then, go crazy and inadvertently kill somebody as we're driving home. It's a slow poison that takes time to take its toll. And the other issue is that we don't like, and for good reason, we don't like to get down on people for their weight and eating habits. It's very personal. People feel some shame in it. And my point is, there shouldn't be any shame in overweight or obesity or poor eating habits. Really, what's happening is driven by biochemistry and not by, some character fault. So we have to get over the idea that people who are overweight or diabetic have some character fault, that they're eating too much and exercising too little. That is not what's going on. they have an impaired biochemistry that's, you know, causing compulsions, that's causing a whole, I won't get into all of it, but, you know, a whole network of problems.
Jill, so, hold the thought. John has a question for you. Go ahead, John.
Yes, I've heard that sugar can lower your immune system by up to 50% for 8-9 hours. And myself, I stay away from sugar, and I find I haven't had the flu for about 5-6 years. I just wonder, is there any truth in it that it does lower your immune system by up to that amount?
Yes, John. In fact, if you went to Nancy Appleton's website, nancyappleton.com, she wrote the book Lick the Sugar Habit. That's her number one, the number one thing on her list is sugar can suppress your immune system. So, and on and on and on it goes. I mean, sugar can contribute to Alzheimer's disease. Sugar reduces learning capacity. Sugar causes food allergies. Sugar causes cataracts, makes one more vulnerable to getting age-related macular degeneration, increases cortisol. Sugar increases advanced glycation end products, which are basically what happens when the cell starts to rust on the outside. So we have a lot of problems associated with sugar, including the suppression of our immune systems.
It's ironic. You don't hear a word about this when it's flu season.
No,
you know,
don't.
You never hear anything, and yet they want children to be immunized, but then kids are being fed all kinds of sugar, which lowers their immune system.
Yeah, we're being distracted. There's no question. Public health needs to take a stand on this issue, and unfortunately, they do not. There are a lot of scientists out there. I'm not the only one saying this, but I think at least, you know, label sugar for the detrimental effects that are associated with this. It's a non-food. It's a drug, actually.
Yeah, like the way I'm starting to look at our healthcare system, our so-called healthcare system, it's more a disease management system than a healthcare system. In a lot of instances when you hear this kind of thing.
Well, no, when you hear Pam Colleen, oh, you've been listening to Pam Colleen, John, I can tell the secret is out. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask Jill Escher this question. Tough question, but we need to wrap our minds around it. If we were suddenly able to find a way to only ingest the amount of sugar that our bodies require, what would be the impact on our health as a nation? What would be the impact on our health budgets? When we come back in just a moment here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Scientists at Princeton University fed sugar to rats for several weeks and then took it away from them. The rats showed opioid symptoms identical to drug withdrawals, such as the shakes and teeth chattering, high-pitched crying and anxiety, even changes in brain chemistry.
This looks like food to other people. To me, this is heroin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could just like put it right in my veins. And in fact, I might even pick the fruit off.
I love when Pam Colleen rants on the radio. I love it when she rants during commercials. You just did a rant. Can you just share what you just shared about? I'm saying, why are we? Yesterday we heard about, now we got to start pumping our boys full of vaccines. Like we are our girls. This morning, Dr. Jillian Kernahan is in here saying, get a flu vaccine, get a flu vaccine. Why aren't we hearing from our medical officials, sugar is crucial to good health, lay off the sugar?
Well, I mean, like I said earlier, the sugar lobby is huge. They have billions of dollars in influence over our governments, and it's a top-down system of control. So the bureaucrats within our government, of course, are beholden to the lobbyists, and they will not tell us the truth. We have to figure this out on our own. There's just too much money behind the scenes that are influencing public health decisions, and unfortunately, the decisions that are coming down the pipes are not what's helping us.
We go back to the phones. Bruce, your thoughts.
Well, I got a question for her. Growing up with my grandparents, my grandmother got me to using a teaspoon of honey in my coffee and tea instead of sugar. Now, is a spoon of sugar and a spoon of honey the same thing, or is it worse?
Yes, it's the same. Sugar is sugar is sugar. You have to be very, very careful with any kind of sugar you're taking in.
Pam, don't ask me to take the honey out of my tea.
You know, we're not saying not to enjoy sugar at all. Jill and I, you know, we have the taste of sweet for a reason. The problem happens when we abuse sugar of any kind.
Bruce, I appreciate the call. Let's go to Susie. Susie, go ahead.
Hello. Thank you, Andy, for having Pam on, and Pam, your guest that you get on. I am diabetic. I'm about 30 pounds overweight, should not be, because I eat extremely healthy. I do not touch sugar. However, I probably eat about 6 fresh fruit every day. is that bad because of that sugar?
Well, fructose that is prevalent in fruit, of course, is very, very hard on the liver. So I don't recommend a lot of fruit in one's diet. Some fruit, yes, that's absolutely fine. But just you have to be moderate with even your fruit consumption.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's a lot of fruit. I wouldn't eat 6 pieces of fruit a day. No way. Mm-mm.
Really?
No.
Okay, Pam, thank you. I heard you, and I will... I'll substitute with more vegetables, I guess.
Or more animal fat. That's the way to go. More animal fat.
Susie, okay. did you hear that answer? Because Pam preaches animal fat, and people say, I didn't hear that properly.
Do you know what? I totally believe her. I totally believe her. Every time somebody buys something and they say, oh, it's low fat. No, no, no. Don't buy anything low fat because they just add tons of sugar to make up for the taste that's gone.
Let me bounce it over to Jill. Jill, what advice do you have for our caller, Susie?
Oh, the same as Pam. I think a moderate amount of fruit, especially the low sugar fruits like berries, are fine as a special treat. But 6 pieces of fruit is a lot, and that's dumping a lot of sugar into your bloodstream. And since you have insulin resistance, which means you can't absorb that glucose, you really shouldn't be eating that much. I do want to say that this is something I learned as I was researching, that at any given time, a healthy person would have approximately 1, maybe 2 teaspoons worth of sugar in their bloodstream at any time. That's how much glucose our body needs. About 1 teaspoon. So if we're eating, a couple pieces of fruit or, let's say, that soda with 10 teaspoons of sugar in it, high fructose corn syrup, we are dumping vastly more than our body really needs or can handle.
Susie,
so
I want you...
That's what's causing the problem.
Susie, I want you to cover your ears because you can't handle the answer to this question, and I can't handle it, and none of us can. Jill, what fraction of our foods have sugar in them?
Well,
Pam was saying there's even sugar in salt that it's added.
That's right. No, commercial salts.
Commercial salt.
Okay. Yeah, if you mean by added sugar, I would say, most processed food and fast food has some added sugar. And sugar, of course, doesn't necessarily have to read sugar on the label. It could be sugar, corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup, maltose, dextrose, evaporated cane juice, evaporated fruit juice. I mean, there are lots of euphemisms and different ways to describe sugar. One of the things that I advise in my book is if it has a label, it stays off our table because processed food, packaged food, can really wreak havoc on our blood sugar and has all sorts of ingredients that really won't help us regain our biochemistry.
The long and short of it is, in the 1700s, we ate about 4 pounds of sugar a year. Now we're eating about 150 pounds of sugar a year.
Wow. Jill, appreciate you joining us. Been a real pleasure. Say hello to all the folks in California.
Thank you.
And it's been a real pleasure having you. The book is called Farewell Club Perma Chub, A Sugar Addict's Guide to Easy Weight Loss.
And her website is endsugaraddiction.com. Be sure to visit it. And this weekend, Andy, I'm teaching again my nutrition boot camp, and I'm going to be doing a class on raw milk. So it's Saturday afternoon. Go to my website, pamkilleen.com, for more details.
And Susie, good luck with your new diet.
Thank you.
And thank you for the phone call. Really,
thanks, Jill.
Really appreciate it. Wow.